It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up reaction after Game 3 on this Monday, October 11th. I'm Caleb Johnson and with my co-host Joe Patrick. Joe, who has just left the post-game press conferences with everyone, how are you feeling after another 3-0 win?
First of all, I'm feeling really aggravated that somebody decided to start this game so that it led out into Monday rush hour traffic. But that's besides the point. I'm feeling really good about, you know, where the Braves are right now in this series. I will say, just right off the top, it feels like the Braves are in an amazing position right now because they've got, you know, obviously they have a series lead. They can possibly just win the National League Division Series tomorrow at home, which is true. But it's, you know, they're probably going to be facing Corbin Burns in game five if it does go to a game five. And if that happens, then even though the Braves will have Max Fried going as well, that's a total, like, you cannot, like, kind of pin that that's going to be a win because you've got Max Fried going, because you're going to be going up against a guy in Corbin Burns who's already shut you down once in this series. So the Braves have given themselves a great opportunity to win this series, to get the job done here at home. I think they need to do that tomorrow. You do not want this series going back to Milwaukee, where it's going to be a raucous crowd. They're going to have a Cy Young pitcher, contending pitcher, going for them. So, it's good. The Braves are in good shape, but they need to take advantage of the position they put themselves in.
Well, and to that point, I think everything is set up for them to be able to do that, to finish the series off tomorrow. You tweeted out something at the end of the game today that absolutely blew my mind, but really should be a huge sigh of relief for Braves fans, is that the Milwaukee Brewers have scored in one inning in this series. The Braves have back-to-back 3-0 wins, and I mean, you want to get just a completely different feel than I had in game one, where it seemed like the pitching matchups were even and the hitting was practically even. I mean, there was one swing of the bat that really defined game one. And so to come from that to two games after, where it's not just that the Braves are finally hitting, but honestly, both of these games would have a larger score deficit if not for some base running blunders. I mean, that's honestly, like, we have reached a point where it's not like one swing of the bat changed each of these games. It's like the Braves are going back to their regular ways of getting hits and scoring runs, and the pitching has held up its end of the bargain. It just feels completely different than it did at the end of game one.
Yeah, I would say, you know, you got to give Ian Anderson so much credit. And, you know, one of the talking points coming into this start for him was the fact that, you know, with the big kind of the pressure of this playoff game, this huge game three that really could kind of turn the tides of the way the series is going to go, could he handle that? And I think that, you know, there were obviously signs, the fact that he pitched for the Braves in the last postseason and did well in those appearances, signified that he would be able to do that. But then he came out today and just kind of put the stamp on it that he's not going to be a pitcher who's like a young kid who gets flustered by these kinds of things. I don't think we necessarily, the two of us, thought he would either. I think we kind of spoke about that, about how he's such a mature guy. You would never think that he's, what, like 23 or 24, however old he is.
Yeah, exactly.
So a huge credit to him for being able to go out there and you know, give the Braves exactly the ideal performance that they would have wanted out there. He got into a little bit of trouble at times in that fifth inning. It got dicey, but hey, you know, that both teams kind of made some base running errors. That one actually really reminded me of the base running error that the Braves made in game seven of the NLCS against the Dodgers last year, when Dansby Swanson, I don't know if you remember, but there was a ball hit. He was on third base. I think they had the bases loaded with none outs. He bolted for home plate, or maybe it was second and third. anyway, he got himself thrown out, and then Austin Riley got thrown out on third base. That was terrible. Anyway, but the, you know, Ian Anderson got the job done for you, gave you a great outing. His changeup was amazing. At one point, the Brewers had swung it at 13 times and missed 10 times. Yeah. Yeah. Just like completely fanning guys with that changeup. And I think that was the story for him. So great to see that. And then we got to talk about Jock Peterson, man. Like that, he's kind of the story. He was clearly the story that the beat writers were loving. I could, you know, just I could see him working and talking about it during the game. And I think everybody was relieved that like nothing else crazy happened, so they could kind of focus the story on him and his pearls.
Yeah, it's something that we've literally talked about it game one and game two. Power of the pearls is the fact that when Jock Peterson comes up to the plate, you can count on him, and he's got this this additional swagger to him, this added level of excitement that he's bringing to this Braves roster. You and I have been ones saying, hey, maybe have him in the lot, you know, maybe have him play an entire game rather than just being right, yeah. A pinch hit. But then I kind of go back and forth and I'm like, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing of like, I mean, I don't love Rosario at the plate. And then today I saw, you know, pretty massive defensive miscue where, you know, ball comes his way and he ran forward and the ball sailed over his head. It was kind of one of those like,
now he's had recently. Of course, he had the other one in that Philly series where he, you know, it was kind of a line drive, kind of similar, and it just, you know, skimmed off the top of his glove there where it really shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, and so it's one of those, and I like, he's supposed to be out there because
for that
he's
reason,
a better defensive outfielder than Jock Peterson. But it's one of those, like, at the end of the day, it is working. Jock Peterson, what he is bringing to this team is so much fun. And like, that is the aspect that I lean on, because that is what has made this Braves team watchable, is the fact that they're not only talented, but they're fun to watch. And I said this, I think, after game two, you lost a lot of that when Ronald Acuna went down and everything that happened with Marcelo Zuna. You lost a lot of that fun. I know Guillermo Heredia has, you know, he's doing the sword thing, and that's great and it's fun, but it's also, it just doesn't reach the same level that having a guy who is out there all the time or is just more, I guess, just more dependable, like more of a face of this team than an end of the bench sort of guy.
Yeah. Well, and I think in Jock's case specifically, like, it's his personality that allows him to actually perform in these kinds of situations. You know, it's that kind of, it's weird to kind of pin down what his personality actually is. And it was funny to just kind of see the press conference take place and the journalists are clearly trying to get at that. Like, who is he? What is he? Because, you know, we're not allowed in clubhouses right now, or potentially forever. Who knows how long it'll be before press writers are back in the clubhouse. But, you know, I think everybody's trying to pin down, like, who is this guy? Because when you ask him questions, you can kind of get a sense of it in press conferences. He's kind of like aloof. He's kind of goofy. Like, he's kind of like semi sarcastic, but also like serious. He's just a strange guy. You get you understand that he's a little bit weird, but it's hard to pin down exactly why. But I think that what he is like, he's never overwhelmed with like anything in particular that's going on. And so whether that's a press conference, he's just kind of shooting from the hip, you know, and just kind of just like going about it. He's clearly not like pressured by it. And I think you clearly see that when he's in these kind of pressure pack moments like he was in today.
Yeah. So, and here's something, this is a bit of a tangent that we'll go for just a second, because talking about Jock is a perfect example of specifically a baseball writer's nightmare. For a lot of people who may not realize, baseball writers, just in general, baseball media, they have a tendency to not really ask questions. They just say words. You know, they say words and they want you to tell your story. They want you to tell
what can what you say feeling. About
yeah.
X, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or that hit in the third inning.
Right.
Yeah, and just wait and
a lot of Freddie is a guy who he can take that. He can run with it. Dansby, a guy who can take that, who can run with it. There's multiple guys on this team who will take and run with just a little thought bubble that's kind of thrown out there.
Mm-hmm.
Joc Pederson is not one of those guys. You've got to really ask him specific things to get that out of him. He's just not going to freely hand you information about him, because and I caught this because at the end of the broadcast on TBS today, they talked to Joc Pederson about just kind of the game and everything like that. And they were doing a lot of that, you know, wow, what a crazy, you know, performance. And he's kind of like, yeah, it was wild. It's great. Yeah. I love it. You know, and like, he's just not giving anyone a whole lot of information. Just because it's not in his natural personality. It seems like he definitely like I want to say like a giddy kid.
Yeah.
Like he loves the game of baseball, no doubt. And he's not just going to give you a bunch of information unless you pull it out of him.
Dwayne Mapp has a good one in the comments of our Facebook live chat. So he's the Marshawn Lynch of
baseball.
There we go. That's great. I love that. That is kind of what he is. It was funny. Jeff Schultz from The Athletic was asking him today about the pearls. And he was like, are they real? Do you get them at the dollar store? Like, you know, what's the story behind these things? And he was like,
he is not giving.
And he gives us like a very literal answer. He's like, yeah, I just liked how they looked. And I texted my jeweler. And yeah, they're real. And there you go. He goes, I texted my jeweler. Sick. But like Dansby, I thought actually had the most interesting kind of quote about Joc, which was, again, this is kind of like people trying to figure out who the hell this guy is and what his personality is. And Dansby said that he reminds him of like his, not necessarily describing his personality, but he reminds him of Josh Donaldson, just in like the way that he is who he is, and like he's kind of oblivious to everybody else's perception of who he is, or he doesn't care about what anybody else thinks about who he is. He's just like doing his own thing. And I think they're very different in that Josh Donaldson was like a super intense guy and kind of had his own kind of characteristics, and Joc Pederson's a little different. Not he doesn't have that same kind of intensity, but just does kind of you know,
playful.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of like goes to the whistle of his own tune, or whatever that phrase is. I forget how it goes.
Well, because I was about to say, like, the thing a lot of people will say, well, I don't really care what anybody thinks about me, but it's not really true.
Yeah.
People absolutely, and especially you want to talk about a group of people who really care what other people think, professional athletes in general. I would say professional baseball players, but professional athletes in general, like you talk about this. See, you know, going from a season of no fans in the stands to the crowds full, and they're like, they feed off of other people's, energy and what they think about them, whether they'll admit it or not. I mean, look, you had the Mets earlier this season who was booing the crowd back because of, yeah, of how they were being treated. So like, I said all that to say though, but you're right. The Joc is the type of person who's kind of like, he is the odd one out of that who really doesn't care. Like I imagine him, because he did the pearls thing right about the same time that he colored his hair and like buzzed the sides or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you saying, you know, him texting his jeweler and being like sick. Like I imagine him just like scrolling Instagram or something and seeing that and being like, yeah, I'm gonna do that. That's cool.
Yeah. And and about the pearls, they were like, somebody asked Dansby like what he thought of the pearls, like when he first saw them. And he was like, the best way I can describe it is like, it was shocking, but also it wasn't at all. And Ian Anderson was like, yes, that's the best way to describe. So, and a hell of a swing on that pitch, by the way, to hit that ball out for a homer. I mean, that was just a great at bat. Man, he's just been worth his weight in gold. When you perform like you do in the playoffs, it doesn't matter what you really do in the regular season, as long as your team's in the playoffs and you start performing. So, again, can't really give Alex Anthopoulos enough credit for some of these guys he's been able to target and acquire and go after. And it's really great to see that Joc has been able to fit in this clubhouse, not just fit in the clubhouse, but I think he's almost changed the clubhouse in a little bit of a way that has really helped the rest of this team, especially with where they're at now.
It's Joctober. I do want to get to one thing that you briefly mentioned it earlier. I was curious what Snit had to say about the massive base running blunder. I'm trying to remember what inning that was. Is that
second
the
inning.
Second inning? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get Adam Duvall running to second base on what I thought was going to be, that was Eddie Rosario at the plate, right?
It was Travis d'Arnaud at the plate.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Duvall on first, Duvall on first, Austin Riley at third, one out, and the fly ball goes out to left field.
Yeah, so Austin Riley is coming home on what's going to, you know, he's going to score.
With two outs.
And you've got Yelich who catches it, and instead of coming home, which, why would he have gone home? He was never going to get it there in time. I mean, that was the broadcast even talked about, like, yeah, Yelich has never been known for his arm.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to second, and I'm just left thinking, like, what are you doing? And also to the point of when Adam Duvall realizes that he's not going to make it there in time, the fact that he didn't at least just run around, like, you know,
almost, right,
like,
exactly,
almost like in a pickle situation, just to make sure. It was just so bizarre. What did Snit have to say about all of that?
Well, he wasn't long with his answer. He just said that was not a smart play by Adam. And he's like, when he came back from the dugout, we had a conversation about that, and he agreed. It's like, oh, okay.
What a like dad thing yeah, to say, you know?
I know. I think had that a conversation. I think it was there were a little bit more curse words in that conversation probably than Snit made it sound like after the game. But no, I mean, I was so flummoxed by it. And I think, you know, you're right. Like, you should have definitely just held up and at least created a pickle situation so that Riley could have scored. But, you know, when I think more about it, I just think that it was just a total brain fart. And he like thought that he was just going to make it. He was like so determined to make it into second base. And I understand the reasoning why you would want to be aggressive and making that base running move is because Dansby Swanson was coming up next. And then it was the pitcher. So you want to get yourself into scoring position for your last position hitter in the lineup. So that's the thinking behind it. But it really, I mean, he shouldn't have done that, though. I think that the fact that he didn't try to hold up for pickle just shows that, like, he wasn't even thinking in those terms. All he was thinking about was trying to get to second if there was that sack fly potential on that hit.
I think at the end of the day, it's one of those, I'm glad it didn't matter. Because
yeah.
I would have been curious to see what Snit would have to say if this game had gone in an opposite direction, only because, like, how many times this season and seasons past has, you know, Ronald done something, or I think, you know, we've had Dansby before in the past. Like, there have been other guys who Snit's kind of used that opportunity of talking to the media to dig into them and make sure they understand how dumb of a play that was. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious to see how he would handle Adam Duvall. But I guess at the end of the day, Snit's probably feeling very different about it at the end of the game because they won. Well, you know, yeah, winning kind of solves it all.
Adam Duvall was probably like the one who was most happy to see Jock Peterson hit that home run of anybody in the stadium. Brian Snicker may have been second because if they lose that game. I mean, we were talking about it. I texted you as soon as it happened. I was like, this is going to be the storyline of this game. Mm-hmm. We at least have our first talking point of this game to talk about because, you know, now it's a trend because it happened. You had a base running mistake. None as bad as that one, but you have a base running mistake in game one of this series. And then if you go back, they had a bad base running error that I referenced earlier in that game 7 of the NLCS against the Dodgers last year. And they had one in the fifth inning of that series too, or I'm sorry, of the fifth game of that series also. Marcelo Ozuna tried to tag up on a sac fly and left the bag early and was thrown out and was called out there. So, I mean, that's clearly, I still think it's not getting talked about because they won the game, but I would say they need to kind of like reassess and like maybe have a message to the team that, you know, maybe you don't have to be so aggressive just because it's the playoffs in certain situations, or just, you know, just send a message to them to just reinforce, you know, we need to be smart on the base paths, not give away not just outs, but also the scoring opportunities that we have, because, you know, especially this series has shown like runs are precious. They've been very hard to come by in this series and you need every single one that you can get.
Well, it's also the one that happened today, it started popping this idea in my head of, you know how Ron Washington will work with guys before the game? They'll be like on their hands and knees, and he's doing, you know, he's doing fielding drills with them to make sure that their, you know, reaction time can get better, how they can kind of handle all these things a little bit better. It made me think of, like, do the Braves need to go back to some, like, little league? Hey, let's get everybody. Let's get everybody on first base. All right. Here's the scenario. Ball gets hit. What are you doing? Kind of thing. You know, like do they need to go through some base running? I get it. Seems rudimentary. It's the playoffs. It's just one of those, like, does there need to be a strategy meeting? Like, because it's bizarre. Really bizarre.
With this one today with Adam Duvall, like, this was the one where it just felt like to me there were so many fail safes for that not to result in the way that it did, which is essentially the worst case scenario for you. You already mentioned one, which is, like, you know, you just, as soon as you see the ball coming into second base and you don't know if you're going to make it or not, you got to play it safe and just try to hold that play up so that at least you give time for Austin Riley to score. I also wonder about EY, the first base coach. Why not just, like, be yelling at his ass to, like, not run there if he's going back to, if you see him tagging up? I get it, like, maybe you tag up and then you kind of, like, fake like you're gonna go or to kind of test it to see where the ball goes, because again, you do want to try to, you know, get the second base if you can in that situation. So I'm not saying there was, like, necessarily something he could have done, but I don't know, maybe some more communication between those two about, like, what the plan is in a situation like that. Maybe he thought that he could get the second base because he knew that Yelich's arm was not good enough. But I don't know. Clearly he was wrong in that instance because he was thrown out there at second base. Yeah. So, yeah.
I also I got to learn something new out of the Major League Baseball rule book today. I don't know about you, Joe. When Lorenzo Cain went running into the outfield wall,
the catch rule,
and came down and the ball pops out, our own 929 Mike Conti tweeted out of, like, can the ground cause a fumble?
Right. Yeah,
you know, and you're having this moment of, like, what is the rule? And sure enough, I see it tweeted out that essentially, unless it is voluntarily taken out of the glove, like, after the play, that the catch has to be completed, essentially.
Okay, yeah.
Like, the ground can cause
through
a fumble.
Through the ground or whatever it is. The Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, so here's the technical rule. It's rule 5.09, section A, paragraph 1. I am not kidding. I'm not making that up. That is real. It is not a catch, however, if simultaneously or immediately following contact with the ball, he collides with a player or with a wall, or if he falls down and as a result of such collision or falling, drops the ball. And then I loved it also because I saw someone tweet out during the game that was like, oh yeah, I love the fact that probably whoever wrote that did it in, like, the 1800s of Major League Baseball, of how that happened. But yeah, how insane that, I mean, because it was wild. They showed the replay. He clearly caught it.
He had time to make a football move.
Yeah, he did. 2 feet were down.
Yeah, that's
right. He collides into the wall, which was brutal that he hit the chain link fence instead of the...
Those are not soft chain link fences like you might be used to.
No. And it also made me, another tangent kind of that came to my mind was, I get, like, the chain link fence is there for, like, bullpens to be able to see. And they've even got the below the chop section over there where fans can kind of look through. And I was like, man, is there really nothing different they can do padding or protective wise instead of that? Because, I mean, guys running into the padded stuff injure themselves plenty of times. And seeing that collision with Lorenzo Cain against the chain link fence was just, I was, ouch. Yeah. I mean, you know, simply is all I could say. But then, yeah, seeing him catch it, collide, and then when he came down, the ball pops out, I just assumed. I was like, well, that's an out. And then, no, sure enough, like I said, according to the Major League Baseball rules, if he's going to make a collision, he's got to come down with it all the way. And that was, you know, that was a new one for me. Learned something new
I didn't know that either. I mean, I didn't know the rule until you just said it now. I'm even what like I even feel like they could, you know, there could be some argument that like he made the catch and then he hit the wall and he still had the ball after he held after he hit the wall, but then he hit the ground and that's
yeah.
But
the rule is saying
there were questions about not, it in the press box too. I, Dave O'Brien was sitting in front of me in the press box and he was meeting like, is that an out? He's like, could they call that an out? And I think there were some people wondering if they were going to review it. Did they ever? I don't think they ever never actually went to go review it on replay. Did they? No.
Okay. Okay. So here's the thing. They might have, but there was no official review done. They might have reviewed it while they took the time for him to essentially like get up off the ground.
Right.
Because, I mean, they did stop play for a couple of minutes there.
Oh, that's right. As so they naturally.
Yeah, as naturally. It just took him a while to get up because, I mean, yeah, that was a huge hit. It was kind of a rough one there.
And I was happy to see, you know, he got a nice ovation from the Braves fans as well when he stayed in the game, which was great to hear.
Joe, with this game heading into game four, Braves up 2-1, who do you want to see make the start tomorrow?
Who do I want to see?
Give me who you want to see and then who you expect to see.
I probably want to see Yanoa. But I expect to see Smiley and Yanoa. I think we're likely looking at a classic piggyback situation where Drew Smiley makes the start, goes one or two innings or three innings, twice through the lineup, essentially, is what I'm expecting from him. Then you hand the ball off to Yanoa. He can probably give you more than one inning. He'll probably go two innings. And at that point, you're probably, what, in like the sixth inning? And then you can kind of go to more of a normal bullpen situation. So that's what I would expect, but I don't know. It's even going to be interesting because now Matzik and Luke Jackson both threw again today. They have thrown in every game of this series so far. I think they expect to throw in every game. Like, I think that those guys will tell you, like, you know, we're ready to go. Like, we'll pitch whenever our number is called and all that kind of stuff. But personally, like, I don't know if I want to see them pitching every single game because, you know, they're maybe not going to be as effective if they are. So, well,
Jeff Francoeur talked about it a lot on the broadcast today. And it was very obvious to see having Matzik out there a third straight day. That was just another day that the Milwaukee Brewers had an opportunity to get used to his stuff, mm-hmm. get used to pitch location, yeah. get Good used point. To speed, all of that. And so it felt odd. I don't know. Like I said before, thankfully, I don't have to make those managerial decisions. I would not have sent Tyler Matzik out there today. You know, I wouldn't have had Matzik or Luke Jackson out there. I'd have sent somebody a little bit low pressure. And AJ Minter, you know, was a guy who was warming up. Jacob Webb is another guy that I would think of. Mm-hmm. Someone who can get the job done and can keep your top of the line guys fresh for what I would hope is tomorrow a game clinching scenario where now are you going to send a guy out for a fourth straight day? And like that's just it gives me chills because the scary scenario is that the Braves reach that part of the game and then blow it because they've, you know, those guys have been seen too much and there's enough tape out on them. I mean, sure, there's a whole season of tape, but it's different when you're the player yourself is facing these guys. And I don't know. I don't like it. I get uncomfy about it.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about this starting, what the Braves might do with the starting pitcher tomorrow. Drew Smiley, the reason that I think it's going to be him is because I don't see why he would have been on the Braves NLDS roster if it weren't for this exact situation, essentially,
which is
the pitch in a clinching game where you have a series lead. If they did not have a series lead, I do not think it would be Drew Smiley. I think it would be Charlie Morton probably coming back on short rest. Mm-hmm. Brian Snicker did say after the game he had talked to, I think he specifically said three guys that he had talked to before today's game about potentially starting game four. I have to think that those three guys are Drew Smiley, Waskar Yanoa, and probably Charlie Morton. Three guys you might throw out there. So I think that's one reason I think it's going to be Smiley. Again, if you look at his splits this season, none of them are great. Again, you know, he just like hasn't had a great year. Certainly what the Braves were expecting when they signed him to that free agent contract. But if you look at, you know, his first time through the order as a starting pitcher, you know, the teams are OPSing 773 against him, which is not great, but he is striking out 6.44 per walk. His strikeout per walk is 6.44. That drops to 1.5 the second time around, and then actually goes up a little bit to 2.8 the third time around. But that is a significant drop. I think it shows you that he can kind of like fool hitters with his approach, and you know, maybe something because they haven't seen him or whatever that first time around. But after that, it starts to get really dicey. So I think that they'll probably throw him through the order once. They'll probably have a plan to throw him to have him pitch the order the second time, go through the Brewers lineup again a second time. But if things get dicey, I think they'll be pretty quick to pull him and get Waskar Yanoa in there.
As far as the Brewers go, they've used Adrian Houser, who would essentially expected to be their fourth starter. They've got Eric Lauer, who is their fifth rotation guy. But what do you think they like? Is there any idea of what they might do? Because, I mean, there's no way Corbin Burnes is coming back for game four.
Well,
right.
Yeah. I mean, Craig Counsell was asked about this after the game, and he categorically said it will not be.
Okay.
Or it won't be Corbin Burnes. He's not going to start game four. He will start game five, surely, because of that. So, you know,
that's got to feel like a huge advantage for the Braves.
100%. I mean, I think that they must have been pretty happy when they heard that news.
Because, oh, yeah.
You know, it's not going to be Burnes. Obviously, it's not going to be Woodruff. So, you know, it's going to be somebody that they feel like they'll be able to have some success with. And I was just thinking, as soon as I heard that, and just, you know, with the way the series has gone, how bad are the Brewers missing Devin Williams right now, who broke his hand?
I know.
In those celebrations. I mean, like, he would be so huge to
that
have.
That was... And that's essentially the role that Houser has kind of filled, like, yep. he has had to, I guess, at least, you know, in their eyes, just for the fact of, yeah, your setup man who is consistent and one of the best in Major League Baseball, yeah, breaks his hand right before the playoffs. I mean, this has got to be the most stress-free I think I've felt heading into a scenario like this, where the Braves have a lead. Mm-hmm. And look, it's all well possible that the Braves absolutely, you know, screw it up and blow this thing tomorrow. It just doesn't feel like it, because it also not only is Craig Counsell like throwing out, you know, his fourth starter in a two different days as a reliever, but then he's throwing different lineups, like batting lineups, different, you know, position players are coming in. Like, he's trying to do anything he can, and it's ended up still with, outside of one swing and one inning, the Brewers not being able to score any runs. I mean, this just seems set up perfectly for the Braves to have the upper hand, which just seems odd. I don't know. It feels weird.
I think us Braves fans too are like specifically familiar with what the Brewers are going through right now, with like you know, you've got this big playoff appearance, you haven't been in the playoffs in several years, and now you're just like going cold, and it doesn't feel like you can do anything to really fix that, you know, at least in the short term. It doesn't feel like there's going to be, and I have to imagine if you're a player, it feels like the pressure is just mounting. You know, it's like that. It's like the gorilla on your back that just keeps getting bigger and bigger, because you're not like having some, you know, breakout moment that kind of releases all that pressure. So I've got to feel like offensively, the Braves look like a much more dangerous team. I feel like the Braves have had, I mean, I don't know if this is actually true, but it just seems like they've had more threatening situations more often in this series. So I think, yeah, for me, again, I'm with you. It makes me a lot more comfortable. And then just knowing that the Brewers don't really have any of their top guys they can throw at you again for one more game, they got to try to survive it. And again, I'll say, like, this is why this game is so important for the Braves to actually lock this thing down, because like, you have a great opportunity to do it. And if you don't take the opportunity, then not only do things get more difficult, but honestly, like, they might not even be in your favor if you don't take this chance that you have when they play tomorrow.
Well, and I'll add one more thing on top of this, is that if the Braves can finish this series out, that gives them extra rest Meanwhile, it looks, at least in my opinion, like the Giants and Dodgers are going to kind of like heavyweight beat up on each other and their five game series. I fully expect that to go five games. Yeah, I don't know about you, but it just seems like those teams are too talented. Yeah. It's almost like, we deserve that series to go five games because of how talented those teams are. And the fact that they can't meet in the NLCS at this point, that seems like an added layer and an added reason for the Braves to finish this thing out tomorrow is because you then get a leg up on one of these two teams who clearly you had a tough time with in the regular season, and anyone, you would expect anyone to that's just, you could, added motivation.
If you win game four, you most likely can come back with Morton, Fried, game one and game two in the NLCS. Like, you can basically set yourself up once again, your rotation, and put it basically in the best position possible. So,
and the Dodgers and Giants wouldn't be able to do that. Like, that's the idea is, you could end up facing potential like Kevin Gausman, game one, who got beat up by the Dodgers, and I know Braves fans would probably, now that he's on the other side, would love to see that sort of scenario happen.
Before we get out of here, I do want to mention John Culver also had a comment here in the comments of the Facebook Live saying Smiley's been working out of the pen, and he thinks that Yanoa will be followed by Smiley, so it'll be Yanoa Smiley instead of Smiley. Definitely possible. And if you look at the their times facing the opponent, I would actually say that, has been better overall. But when you look at he actually improves his second time around, his stats facing the opponent the second time. Both are terrible the third time they see, which is, pretty much every pitcher is. It's very hard to be effective consistently the third time seeing an order. But I would not be surprised, John. You might be right on that one, too.
Well, and I guess at the end of the day, the only thing that would surprise me, because sure, I could see a start, I could see Smiley start. The only thing that would shock me is if one of them doesn't pitch tomorrow. Like if Snit decides, and I guess there is a scenario, and I only see this if Enoa starts. If Enoa's hot and and he's just mowing through this lineup, then maybe you do extend this thing, and if he could get it out to the later innings and then let your bullpen kind of finish it up. Otherwise, I fully expect that we're going to see, and Smiley, even though Smiley still just makes me so nervous.
You never know what is the kind of pitcher who can just like pull a seven innings of shutout ball out of his ass. He's that kind of pitcher. So that could definitely happen. And he can hit for himself too. Like, he can do a lot of things that are interesting. He's obviously got a nice strikeout rate. So but I'm with you though. When I just keep thinking about this game, I just can't stop thinking about how much of a good position the Braves are in right now with a chance to win this thing, and to do it at home in front of the home fans would be awesome as well.
Yeah. Well, also thankfully tomorrow the Braves will get more of a regular start time. You won't have to deal with the 1 o'clock sun. It's set for a 5:07 first pitch, which hopefully will also fill out the stands a little bit better. I noticed today, and I can't criticize Braves fans too much per se. Like, people have to work, and so having it just feels weird in general.
They did announce it was a sellout. So I imagine that there were quite a bit of fans that were like trying to get out of the sun and just like not be in their seats like for the whole game.
Yeah, sure. Well, and also, sellout only count 85%, I think, is what it takes to have a sellout. I think what was just more noticeable to me was behind home plate was an area that I expected to be filled out. That is one I completely forgot. I don't know if you saw it being at the game, but it was definitely talked about on the broadcast. which is Chipper Jones having an E5, as they kept calling it, with a foul ball coming to him. And he just completely whiffed on it in a way, like it came right to him. Yeah. And it, you know, it was almost like he just got a little scared.
It was like, I know. That's the funny part, is the way he messed it up was really funny. And I loved Andrew Jones sitting right there next to him, absolutely, like laughing at him. That was great. That was great.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have your legends right there, who can take in a nice Monday afternoon game, and you know, we get to poke a little fun at them when they mess up things like that. Anything else you want to get to, Joe, before we get out of here?
No, I think we can get out. This was good. Hopefully they win tomorrow, right?
Absolutely. I'm looking for a series ender tomorrow with, like I said, a 5:07 first pitch. It will be on TBS once again. For my co-host Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for watching Batter Up Recap.